97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It's Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. I'm Bo Matthews. That's Mark Cox. That's Carl Middleman.
Hello.
And Happy New Year.
Finally feeling a little more like winter out there now that it's 2022. I guess we were waiting on that.
I'm a Minnesota boy, so I was hoping for a white Christmas. Didn't get it, so I was happy with 70.
True. Yeah, but happy life. The Blues going to Minnesota and playing outdoor in single digits. That's going to be pretty cool.
No, negative digits, Mark.
Negative digits.
What's the coldest weather you've been in?
I told this story on the show this week. When I was still living in Ohio, I went to a football game at Cleveland Municipal Stadium, Browns versus the Bengals. Would have been 89, maybe 88 or 89.
All right.
And it was, air temperature was about 10.
Yeah.
And there was a 20 mile an hour wind blowing off the lake. So I'm guessing we were in negative 8 or 9 degrees at least, air temperature wise. I mean, chill. Factor-wise.
Wind chill, yeah.
It was miserable. And you would walk into the bathroom. Should I tell the story, Carl?
Mm.
And back then at Cleveland Municipal Stadium, all they had were troughs in the men's room. And when you would open the door, a ball of steam, and I will let you imagine what that was, would roll out of the door every time the door opened.
Oh.
Because it was so cold outside.
Sure.
And that bathroom is about one of the warmest spots in the building if you could stand the smell.
I remember as a kid, I grew up in Minnesota, so we were watching the Vikings. When we watched them on Sunday and it was snowing or a blizzard, and they're playing, the screen on TV was white. And I don't know how they called the game or how they played the game, but temperatures, I'm not afraid of them. I started radio in Gillette, Wyoming, a little boom town.
Oh, yeah.
38 below actual temperatures. And I thought, okay, I'm a Minnesota boy. I can handle this, but there's nothing out there. It's just,
when it's that cold and you take a breath and your nose hairs freeze.
100%. We would leave our vehicles running all night long so we could get to work the next day.
What?
Absolutely.
Just leave them idle all night?
Yep. And hope they run all night.
Yeah.
But the other thing that freaked me out about the really ultra cold and snow out there out west was when the highway patrol would call the radio station and said, okay, we're shutting the highway down. They have gates on the highway. You've seen them.
Yeah.
They shut them down, and it freaked. I had claustrophobia being stuck in a town.
You
couldn't leave. That freaked me out. And for everybody that was out on the road, you're on your own. It's crazy cold, but nothing like that here. But it's nice cold weather now. Coming up on the show, I wanted to talk to you about this Byrna gun. It's a pepper ball style pistol or rifle that is being offered to the general public, which I think is a great idea, especially since we talk about all the first time gun buyers in the last couple of years. How dangerous that can be if they haven't shot it ever, but they've got it in their nightstand. That's so dangerous. This is a less lethal thing, and now they're talking about putting it into law enforcement.
I have an uncle who's bought a handgun a few years ago. I was at the house, and I saw him again this past trip to Ohio and asked him about the gun. He's still never taken it out of the box and shot it.
Ooh.
And he brought it for home defense. So you're absolutely right. That's a valid point. When I looked at this gun, and we're going to talk more with a lieutenant from a sheriff's department, they're going to utilize these initially, and it sounds like in their jail. But looking at the gun, other than the fact that it's orange,
right,
it looks like a regular handgun in the pictures. Maybe it's a little thicker. I don't know. The rifle is also orange, apparently, a different color. So it's pretty clear that you're not grabbing the more lethal weapon that you might have. But in a close situation in your house, you know, if you fired it at somebody and ended up being the wrong person, it's non-lethal.
Right.
They're going to suffer because of the pepper powder in it. But beyond that, it certainly sounds like an idea.
It would certainly give you the time to get away or, you know, run or something like that if you could hit them. There's a lot of benefits to it. They're not cheap at all. But, I'm a huge fan for anybody, male or female, carrying mace. Where else I think this Byrna gun, it's BYRNA .com if you want to look it up. The other place I think it would be really helpful is for hikers. The dog attack that we heard about this week. My goodness, that rabid dog in the neighborhood. What was that? That's Lake St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple people got attacked by a dog. I think this would be great. I wonder if it would work on a pet. I say a pet.
You probably have to hit it in the head.
Well, yeah.
I would guess.
I wonder how that would react. But anyway, for hikers, you went out to where the bears are this past year.
Oh, this would be worthless.
You don't think the pepper would do anything to them?
No.
Well, what's bear spray?
Now they might
what's bear spray?
Well, it's the most concentrated form of pepper spray on Earth, so they might be able to make a more lethal version of the pepper spray in the pods.
Okay,
but you know, there's no guarantee bear spray is going to work. It's just designed that if you hit them in the face with it, you hope it will deter them. The problem is it'll spray up to 30 feet, but if there's the slightest bit of wind, it carries away and it never hits them.
Or it carries right back to
so
you.
So imagine having to be within 30 feet of an enraged grizzly bear and trying to hit it with bear spray.
Okay.
I'll take the 10 millimeter any day of the week.
Well, again, for those that don't want... you got my point.
I do get your point. Maybe an option. Maybe they come up with a super bullet
duper,
for that
super
one.
Duper,
yeah, super duper.
We're also going to talk to Tim Chelsvik from Drury Outdoors, the Thinking Woodsman, on the program. But coming up next, Lieutenant Greg Smith from Johnson County, Kansas Sheriff's Department, to talk about this new technology, the Burn-A-Gun. Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Stay right there. It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Mark Cox, Bo Matthews, Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew.
Well, it might sound a little different if you get on board with the idea of a Burn-A-Gun, which to me, there's a play on words there because we've all seen, you know, the cop shows, the burner gun.
The burner phone.
Yeah, the burner phone.
Burner phone. It's like just a little temporary thing.
Yeah,
right?
This is BYRNA, and I believe I heard some national advertising for this thing. It's basically a pepper ball pistol, which is different than the beanbag shotguns that they have, obviously different than the taser. And this guy, this department actually was in the news that they are going to entertain getting some of these. Want to welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. This segment brought to you by Razorback Armory, by the way. And I don't know if they sell the Burn-A-Gun, but they've got real guns, and they've got some one-of-a-kinds collectibles. They love to customize guns. If you've never been to see and meet Jesse and Brad at Razorback Armory, do that in De Pere, half mile east of 270. Go to RazorbackArmory.com. It's a great store, and they can customize anything you want. But welcome to the show, Lieutenant Greg Smith from the Johnson County, Kansas Sheriff's Department, to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. We saw the news story that that your sheriff's department is going to be buying some of these Burn-A-Guns. But I wanted you to explain to the listeners, because these are available for the public, but law enforcement is entertaining the idea of adding it to your arsenal as well. You've had experience trying this thing out, right?
Yes, I have.
And what was that experience like?
Well, we did some testing on it just to see if it would be something that we could utilize as another form of less lethal to utilize with our department. And from what we've seen so far in the preliminary, it looks like it's going to work fairly well for what we're looking to do.
Yeah, you know, they're pretty clear, Lieutenant Mark Cox here, by the way. They're pretty clear on the website for Burna. This is not a firearm. I guess it's not regulated at all, but it's designed as another less lethal option for your department. How would this work? Do you guys carry tasers now as it is?
Well, right now, in the jail, where this program is going to start out with, we carry tasers, we carry OC spray.
Okay.
On patrol, they carry tasers, they carry less lethal shotguns, and pepper spray out there and batons. So this is going to be added to that group of weapons. And here in the jail, the way we plan on utilizing it is our supervisors here. We usually have two sergeants on per shift. And they will both be utilizing the Burn-A-Gun, and then our deputies and module officers will be carrying tasers.
Yeah. So I'm assuming then before using something like this or purchasing it for the department, you guys have tried them out. What's that like? I remember when I believe our local police department and county police here in the greater St. Louis area, when they first got the tasers at the academy, they made the officers get tased so they'd have an idea what it was they're about to put somebody through. What is the impact of this thing? How do you shoot it? How hard does it hit? Give us an idea what you're dealing with here.
Well, if you've ever played paintball, it's very similar to that. The projectile comes out of the barrel about 300 feet per second, which is approximately about the way it does in paintball. This is to be used, anywhere out to 60 feet. With some of the things we've done preliminary, we haven't shot each other with them yet, but that will come as we go through the training, unfortunately, because I've been tased 7 times. And
wow.
And I've been hit by a few other of our non-lethal stuff just to get the idea of what it is. Pepper spray is probably the worst thing you can ever deal with outside of OC. So this is basically a dry pepper spray is what it is. It's 5%. Right. I can't even say it, the oleorsin capsicum, which is basically what's in our liquid pepper spray. But the nice thing about this is some of the stuff we've done recently is it comes out almost like a talcum powder consistency. So when it hits what it's aimed at, or if you shoot it into a room, it hits and it disperses and drops to the floor rather quickly. Whereas with a liquid OC, when you spray that into a room, it's everywhere.
Right.
And depending on which way the wind blows, it's, I've used it in the field outside in the wind, and I've gotten just as much of it as the bad guy got, and then we're both fighting and crying.
Yeah.
So this has a little bit better of a staying powder. It kind of hits the intended person and pretty much just affects them for the most part. Now, of course, when you go hands-on, you'll get some of that effect, but it's not near as bothersome with wind and things like that.
Greg, how long have you been in law enforcement?
34 years.
Okay, so in the 34 years, however long ago it was that the taser came out, think back to that first time that you were able to use it or receive it. Were you as impressed with that as you are the Byrna gun, or more impressed with the Byrna gun?
Actually, the taser, for its purpose, works really well, because when it connects like it's supposed to, it's an absolute. Very few people can fight through that, unlike pepper spray, where I've seen people get hit with pepper spray and then just look at you and go, give me something to eat this with, and we'll continue on.
I think you said put it on my taco.
Yeah,
right?
Put it on my taco. Let's go. And that's a scary thought when you hit somebody with that stuff and they look at you like you shouldn't have done that, So, what I like about this is that, unfortunately, the taser has its limited uses, 26 feet, baggy clothing it doesn't always work on. You got to get the probes. They got to hit just right in order to get the effect you need. Pepper spray, on the other hand, works really well. Unfortunately, it gets everybody. And if you shoot it inside, it gets everybody in a room. It gets everybody in the adjacent room.
Right.
One of the nice things that we've noticed about this, and we actually did shoot a individual cell. We shot it like we would think we would intend to use it for several different reasons. We shot it. My colonel, who's in charge of the jail here, my major and myself walked into the room about 1 second after we shot it, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. And the major, or the colonel who went in first, was affected within about 30 seconds of being in there. The major got some effect. I didn't get hardly any, and it affected the major to the point he had to walk out and, take a couple breaths and get some clean air. But what I like about this is it doesn't affect the adjoining rooms. It doesn't affect the people coming in. This is one of those things where if you have somebody that's being a problem, you can actually shoot at the ceiling and let it fall down on top of them, and then just kind of let them cook.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then when they're ready to give up, we can walk in and take them into custody, as opposed to, okay, 5 guys, let's go get him, like it used to be when I first started. It was you get the big guys and let's go get this guy.
Well, I'd like to compliment you on your initiative there of sending your superior officers in first. I think that was brilliant.
Well, actually, our colonel here, Dale Reed, is very much a use of force type person, and and very much interested in this, and he's one of the spearheaders, along with Sheriff Calvin Hayden, to implement this program here in the jail, because, you know, we have 500 in custody now, but we've had up to 1,000. COVID's kind of changed the way things are being kept here, but the most of use of forces that happen in the county happen inside the jail.
Yeah, I'll bet they do. We're talking to Lieutenant Greg Smith from the Johnson County, Kansas Sheriff's Department. And, you know, you mentioned that this is specifically for use in the jail. Do you foresee a time when it's used by officers who are out on the street? Because, you know, I'm thinking back to a case we had here in St. Louis recently that is very similar to that Kim Potter case, where she was trying to chase down, in the St. Louis case, somebody who had shoplifted, ordered them to stop. They wouldn't stop. She drew, instead of her taser, she drew her handgun, accidentally shot somebody. So if you're carrying this on your body, there's got to be a lot of training involved so you know what you're pulling out, right?
Yes, and that's one of the things that's nice about this. We will carry this weapon. Not only is it a bright orange color, so it's visually different. All of our less lethal equipment is bright orange usually. If we have a less lethal shotgun, it's got a bright orange stock and a bright orange barrel on it and stuff. So this will be carried support hand draw. So if you're familiar with drawing, you have your strong hand draw and your support hand. So you will basically look like an Old West gunslinger. You'll have a right side holster or left side, whichever. I don't like to talk about the lefties, but I'm a righty, so we don't worry about the lefties too much. But for us righties, our gun's on our right side, and the less lethal will be on the left side. You'll have to physically draw that with your left hand. And I think a lot of the problems we've had with the issues with taser and stuff like that, and it's not taser's issue, it's the way in which we've always taught it as a cross-draw weapon, to where you actually are grabbing the less lethal with your lethal hand.
Okay.
And sometimes in the heat of the moment and all the situations quickly unfolding, you forget that your right hand's got a bad gun in it as opposed to a good gun.
Right.
And so if we always use our support hand for our less lethal weapons, you're less likely, I can't say it won't happen, but your mind will be set that if it's in my support hand, that's an okay shooty. If it's in my right hand, that's a hurt 'em shooty, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. Right. Well, when it gets implemented into even your jail, I would love to revisit our conversation with it, you know, in a real life experience to get some data on that. Are there other departments that are using this that you know of?
I think there's some place up in the Northeast where they've replaced all of their, because I think up in Seattle area, up in that, or Northwest, sorry, where Seattle and all that, where they've pretty much outlawed them from using anything up there, that they've went to the, I think it's the M4, which is the rifle, kind of like the AR version of it,
yeah,
to use it up there. And I know that we're looking into that. As we go through this process, you know, the jail here is the first place to use it. My guess is that by the end of the year, it'll be out in our patrol division, because it's definitely I believe, based on how we've used it so far, that it's a good extra choice.
I'll bet. You know, and I was thinking back to that. I played paintball before.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, usually I'd go out there and I'd rent the equipment because I didn't do it regularly. And then somebody'd come strolling in there that bought one of those professional paint guns. And the accuracy difference in all of that was incredible. So my guess is that one of those AR-style Byrna rifles is, do you have any idea what the range is on something like that?
I think those are out to 50 yards.
Okay.
And the key to this is, too, to going back to paintball, this is the same .68 caliber projectile the paintball is, but this is a powdered substance inside, so it doesn't have the ability, it doesn't have the tendency to cause it to misshape when it comes out. You know, a paintball sometimes, you know, it's like a muzzle loader.
Yeah.
Goes right, goes left, goes up, goes down. This one we found shooting all the weapons. They brought everything out. We shot all of them, and all of them were point of aim. Now, the further you get out, you'll have a little drop. But for the most part, you're shooting, you know, a 4 or 5 inch group without any trouble at all. even out at 60 feet with a handgun.
You had said when I talked to you before, Lieutenant Greg Smith, you said that your department has been on board with innovative ideas. And what was that innovation that you guys jumped on board in the history of your sheriff's department before that you mentioned?
Well, like I said, I've been with the sheriff's office a long time. I worked at patrol for 27 years. We were the first agencies in this area to have body-worn cameras.
Okay.
And everybody now wears a camera.
Yeah.
We've had cameras on everybody for at least 4 or 5 years now. When we went to the taser was another thing that we went to. We also use a thing called a glove, G-L-O-V-E. I can't tell you what it all basically is, but it's like any of you farm kids that lived out in the country and had the electric fence turned on, burn weeds, and you grab that fence and get a handful of that, that's what this glove is. It's basically an electrified glove that if someone is holding someone or holding something hostage or won't do something for us in the jail environment, we can grab a hold of this thing, and it will make them let go.
Really? Well, I've never heard of that.
Too, and I did not like it.
Wow. I had a cousin make me pee on an electric fence when I was a kid, and I didn't like that either.
Yeah, I'll bet not. Well, no.
That's exactly what I was talking about, because I was a country kid, and when I'd bring the city kids out, I'd go, hey, you know, do this.
You ought to try this, yeah, just once.
But that's exactly what that feels like. It is it's in a glove form, kind of like a snowmobile glove. You push the button on it, and you just reach out and put a hold of somebody. And it hurts. I mean, it hurts really bad, and it makes you rethink what you're doing. And it's just one more way in which we have looked at these new technologies to come in, because I don't care how good a fighter you are or how big a guy you are, when you fight somebody, somebody gets hurt, whether it's or the good guy or the bad guy, someone gets hurt. And the less we can fight, I mean, in a perfect world, I'd walk up to somebody and say, you're under arrest, turn around, put your hands behind your back.
Sure.
They would do so. They would get in my car, and we would be on with it.
And you know? What? And any of these big, high-profile cases over the last several years wouldn't have been an issue if the bad guys listened to law enforcement.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I've been on this side where I've told somebody, turn around, put your hands behind your back, get in the car, and they've done it for me. And I've been on the side where they're like, we ain't going without a fight. And I'm like, okie doke. Well, I guess that's where we got to go.
I mean, bad decisions.
You know, and unfortunately, you know, and this might be off topic, but as law enforcement, we don't have a choice. If we've got a bad guy out there doing bad things, we have to do something to stop the bad.
Yes.
And sometimes when we do stuff to stop the bad, it doesn't always work out like we hope.
True.
But if we don't do something, we're vilified for not doing something. So I think by us always looking to new tools, new ways of doing things, new things, that we are doing our best to protect the citizens of Johnson County and those who drive through Johnson County, and protect those that we have to arrest and bring to jail from getting hurt, if at all possible. And you have to always be looking for new things.
Well, it's a great point, and thank you for your service. And we've always got the backs of our law enforcement members around here. So, Lieutenant, we appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you guys for calling us.
Absolutely. Happy New Year to you. And we'll reach out in a month or so, or a couple of months, and see how the experiment is going with the new Byrna gun. That's BYRNA, which, as we mentioned earlier in the show, is also great for home defense, especially if you're a first-time gun owner and you haven't trained or shot it. This may be the better option for you. Just saying, because there's a lot of people that have bought a gun and is like, oh, I'm scared, but at least I've got one. But if you haven't trained, that's the worst thing you could do.
That's a good point.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah.
That's my point.
Lieutenant Greg Smith from the Johnson County, Kansas Sheriff's Department. Thank you, my friend. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
Yep.
All right. Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. I'm so glad we were able to talk to him, because it is, like he said, it's just other tools. The glove thing, I think, is cool.
I'll bet a lot of cop pranks happen with that glove, too. Pushing that thing, landing on somebody's seat. Oh, yeah. You know that's
right.
Happened.
All right. Stick around on the next segment of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Tim Chelsvik from Drury Outdoors, the Thinking Woodsman, is going to join us next.
listening to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. A happy 2022. I hope everyone had a great New Year's Eve, and maybe you're out recovering today. I don't know.
That could be. Yeah. Maybe you're out planning your next hunt.
Could be.
Yeah. And so I thought it was a good idea, and so did Carl. It was actually his idea, because he saw Tim Chelsvik from Drury Outdoors at the Blues game this week. And do you get recognized in public? Do people ask you for autographs and selfies, Tim?
Are you guys talking to Carl?
No, I'm talking about you. Yeah. I know Carl gets that, but you're famous.
You're Carl friggin' Middleman.
Wait a minute, his head is swelling. Stop as you it. Speak, Tim. Stop.
Oh, headphones just broke.
Hockey game on Wednesday, Tim requested this John Party song.
I didn't know you were like the DJ extraordinaire at
I play all
If you show up and you text him, he'll play, generally speaking, whatever you ask.
It's got to be a song that can be played at a hockey game.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to play Skrillex.
Well, yeah, actually, I have. Bangarang Spray.
Oh, wow.
Speaking in Chinese? Brother. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Skrillex?
Yes, those are songs that we play at hockey. And so Tim said, hey, I'm going to be at the hockey game on Wednesday. Can you play John Party? And I said, I have a perfect spot for that. Let me know when you're there. Because sometimes when people text me and like, hey, can you play? And I play it. They're not at the game yet. And I'm
defeats
not gonna
the purpose.
It. I'm not going to play it again. So
it was super sweet of Carl to do that. It was a song. It was a song dedicated to my wife, and I told her, "It's like you got a surprise coming. You know, it might happen. You know, during the game, but just be listening." She's like, "What am I listening for?" I was like, "Just listen." And when he popped it up, it was pretty cool. She couldn't believe it. So thank you again, Carl, for doing.
You're welcome.
That.
And the name of the song.
Tequila Little Time by John Party.
I've heard that one.
It's what we just bumped in with.
I'd have started with Tequila Makes Your Clothes Fall Off, but that's just me. I'm afraid.
So, Carl, if I next time I'm at the Blues game and I request a good Jim Stafford song, like I got stoned and I missed it, would you play that for me?
If there's the opportunity, they're doing a Grateful Dead night, and I don't know how I'm going to be playing Grateful Dead music.
Oh.
That kind of, they're not up-tempo enough for...
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
I know.
So would Jim Stafford from, you know, that is from his album, Not Just Another Pretty Foot. Remember that one?
I
had that album. I can't believe you guys don't know it. Come on. Now you got to go to Branson to see it.
That's real old country. Right.
Do the Bald Knobbers do that song?
Jim Stafford does that song.
Yeah. All right. Well, the reason we have Tim on is because he is a hunter extraordinaire. And if you see him in public, ask him for a selfie because he'll charge you $5 for it. The Thinking Outdoorsman, mm-hmm. Drury Outdoors. Has it been a good year? Was 2021 a good year for Drury Outdoors?
Yeah. I mean, overall, and I think a lot of hunters saw that it was kind of a tough deer season. And deer season is still on. Archery season is still on for most people. But yeah, just the way the moon phase fell out in October and November, and the unseasonably warm temperatures we've had, they really push a lot of the whitetail rutting activity. It still happens. The rut always happens. People say, "Well, we didn't have much of a rut this year." The deer always have a rut. The deer are always, they always breed around the same time. But sometimes when the moon phase doesn't work out quite right and the temperatures aren't right, a lot of that rutting activity happens overnight when people can't hunt. Mark sounds like you maybe have some experience with the slow deer season.
I'll tell you my nightmare deer story coming up, but go ahead.
but a lot of guys had a slow season, and we've seen kind of the same thing across our 60 team members that it's been kind of a tough year overall.
Yeah, it was a tough year for me. I can tell you. So,
did you see anything, Mark?
I did. So, for the first time this year in a long time, I saw an 8-point buck.
Whoa.
Okay.
And I decided I'm going to go to the very back side of the property where we hunt. I drove the ATV back there in the dark. Thought I knew where I was going, but hadn't been back there in a while. They'd done some logging and cut a new trail, and I took the wrong trail. So, I get off the bike, and I'm suddenly lost. And I've got my little... on Hunt app, if I'm allowed to talk about that when I got Drury on here, and I'm trying to find the tree stand in the dark just by pointing GPS. So I wandered around for 30 or 40 minutes up and down hills. I couldn't find it. I finally had to sit down by a tree until it got daylight, and then I walked down the hill. I was only about 50 yards from the stand. I was close.
So close.
I get up in the stand. I'm thinking I've probably blown my opportunity now. Sitting there maybe 30 minutes, I look off to my left. I see something. There's an 8-point buck moseying his way up the hill about 70 yards to my left.
Oh, boy.
So at this point, I've got my M1A. I've got him in my scope. I'd loaded it in the dark, right? I pull the trigger, and I hear a loud click.
Oh.
I had a misfire. I thought for sure I didn't have a round in there. Well, the deer looks up at me. I tried to be still, and I tried to turn the gun over and get the jam out, which took a minute. And by the time I got the gun reloaded and lifted it up again, I saw a white tail and hoofs flying up.
Oh. But on that orange lump just made a noise. I'm out of here.
Through the tears in your eyes.
I'm like, that's brutal. This is my luck. And I took that round. It was a Hornady round. I took it back to base camp later, and I tried firing it again. It would not fire. And every other round in the magazine did fire. So I just got a bad round, just bad luck.
But, well, next deer season, throw some Winchester Deer Season XP in your chamber and see what happens. I guarantee that round's going to go off.
Good advice.
Would this have been your biggest deer ever?
Oh, by far.
Oh, really?
In terms of...
I saw the tears fall.
You're listening to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. A happy 2022. I hope everyone had a great New Year's Eve, and maybe you're out recovering today. I don't know.
That could be. Yeah. Maybe you're out planning your next hunt.
Could be.
Yeah. And so I thought it was a good idea, and so did Carl. It was actually his idea, because he saw Tim Chelsvik from Drury Outdoors at the Blues game this week. And do you get recognized in public? Do people ask you for autographs and selfies, Tim?
Are you guys talking to Carl?
No, I'm talking about you.
Yeah.
I know Carl gets that, but you're famous.
You're Carl friggin' Middleman.
Wait a minute, his head is swelling as you speak, Tim. Stop it.
Headphones just broke.
Hockey game on Wednesday. Tim requested this John Party song.
I didn't know you were like the DJ extraordinaire at
I play all.
If you
the
show
music.
Up and you text him, he'll play, generally speaking, whatever you ask.
It's got to be a song that can be played at a hockey game.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to play Skrillex.
Well, yeah, actually, I have. Bangarang.
Oh,
Spring.
Wow.
Are you speaking in Chinese? Brother. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Skrillex?
Yes, those are songs that we play at hockey. And so Tim said, hey, I'm going to be at the hockey game on Wednesday. Can you play John Party? And I said, I have a perfect spot for that. Let me know when you're there. Because sometimes when people text me and like, hey, can you play? And I play it. They're not at the game yet. And I'm
defeats
not gonna
the purpose.
It. I'm not going to play it again. So
It was super sweet of Carl to do that. It was a song. It was a song dedicated to my wife, and I told her, "It's like you got a surprise coming. You know, it might happen. You know, during the game, but just be listening." She's like, "What am I listening for?" I was like, "Just listen." And when he popped it up, it was pretty cool. She couldn't believe it. So thank you again, Carl, for doing.
You're welcome.
That.
And the name of the song?
Tequila Little Time by John Party.
I've heard that one.
It's what we just bumped in with.
I'd have started with Tequila Makes Your Clothes Fall Off, but that's just me. I'm afraid.
So, Carl, if next time I'm at the Blues game and I request a good Jim Stafford song, like I got stoned and I missed it, would you play that for me?
If there's the they're doing a Grateful Dead night, and I don't know how I'm going to be playing Grateful Dead music.
Oh.
That kind of, they're not up-tempo enough for...
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
I know.
So would Jim Stafford from, you know, that is from his album, Not Just Another Pretty Foot. Remember that one?
I
had that album. I can't believe you guys don't know it. Come on. Now you got to go to Branson to see it.
That's real old country. Right.
Do the Bald Knobbers do that song?
No, Jim Stafford does that song. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Well, the reason we have Tim on is because he is a hunter extraordinaire. And if you see him in public, ask him for a selfie because he'll charge you $5 for it. The Thinking Outdoorsman, Drury Outdoors. Has it been a good year? Was 2021 a good year for Drury Outdoors?
Yeah. I mean, overall, and I think a lot of hunters saw that it was kind of a tough deer season. And deer season is still on. Archery season is still on for most people. But yeah, just the way the moon phase fell out in October and November, and the unseasonably warm temperatures we've had, They really push a lot of the whitetail rutting activity. It still happens. The rut always happens. People say, "Well, we didn't have much of a rut this year." We always the deer always have a rut. The deer are always they always breed around the same time. But sometimes when the moon phase doesn't work out quite right and the temperatures aren't right, a lot of that rutting activity happens overnight when people can't hunt. So, Mark, sounds like you maybe have some experience with the slow deer season.
I'll tell you my nightmare deer story coming up, but go ahead.
But a lot of guys had a slow season, and we've seen kind of the same thing across our 60 team members that it's been kind of a tough year overall.
Yeah, it was a tough year for me. I can tell you. So,
did you see anything, Mark?
I did. So, for the first time this year in a long time, I saw an 8-point buck.
Whoa.
Okay.
And I decided I'm going to go to the very back side of the property where we hunt. I drove the ATV back there in the dark, thought I knew where I was going, but hadn't been back there in a while. They'd done some logging and cut a new trail, and I took the wrong trail. So, I get off the bike, and I'm suddenly lost. And I've got my little On Hunt app, if I'm allowed to talk about that when I got Drury on here, and I'm trying to find the tree stand in the dark just by pointing using the GPS. So I wandered around for 30 or 40 minutes up and down hills. I couldn't find it. I finally had to sit down by a tree until it got daylight, and then I walked down the hill. I was only about 50 yards from the stand. I was close.
So close.
I get up in the stand. I'm thinking I've probably blown my opportunity now. Sitting there maybe 30 minutes, I look off to my left. I see something. There's an 8-point buck moseying his way up the hill about 70 yards to my left.
Oh boy.
So at this point I've got my M1A. I've got him in my scope. I'd loaded it in the dark, right? I pull the trigger and I hear a loud click.
Oh.
I had a misfire. I thought for sure I didn't have a round in there. Well, the deer looks up at me. I tried to be still, and I tried to turn the gun over and get the jam out. Which took a minute, and by the time I got the gun reloaded and lifted it up again, I saw a white tail and hoofs flying up.
Oh. But on that orange lump just made a noise. I'm out of here.
Through the tears in your eyes.
I'm like, that's brutal. This is my luck. And I took that round. It was a Hornady round. I took it back to base camp later, and I tried firing it again. It would not fire.
And every other round in the magazine did fire. So I just got a bad round, just bad luck.
But, well, next deer season, throw some Winchester Deer Season XP in your chamber and see what happens. I guarantee that round's going to go off.
Good advice.
Would this have been your biggest deer ever?
Oh, by far.
Oh, really?
In terms of one with a rack, I've killed a bigger deer that had lost its rack. But I'd never killed one that was mountable. That one would have been mountable.
But there is an upside to the story, isn't there, Mark?
Yes, there is. So the deer runs up the hill from me on the property next door. At the top of the next hill, I can see a hunter in a tree stand up there. Come to find out, I hear a gunshot. They killed my deer at the top of the next hill. And it ended up that guy had his nephew out there. It was his first time hunting, and he killed my 8-point buck.
Oh, no.
So I did that kid. That kid's got a memory for life because of my failure.
He'll be telling his story until he's 85 years old. And guess what? You'll be telling your same story for until you're 85.
Everybody
and Mark
wins.
Cox hates some random 13-year-old kid.
You know, Tim, I know this is a story of about a friend of a friend of a friend of yours, but there was a story of a 210-inch?
It was 200. 200. He's been tracking him since he was 150.
Okay. We'll call him BG at this point because he's a little shy to talk about the story. But this monster deer has been tracked for 4 or 5 years. This guy's gotten several sheds. This is in St. Louis County. Can you tell us what you know about that story?
Just like you said, Bo, the guy has a lot of history with this deer, and this guy, like one of his main, the main type of bow hunting he does is suburban bow hunting around in St. Louis County. And, boy, it's such a mixed bag. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity there because there are some really good deer. In fact, we know that there are too many deer in St. Louis County for the carrying capacity of the land. It's dangerous for motorists. It's dangerous. You know, people can't have gardens, and like it's there are too many deer. They need to be taken out. Bow hunting is a great tool to do that, and that's what this guy does. He bow hunts a lot. But the other side of that that equation then is public sentiment, and not everybody is okay with hunting, and some people have issues with it, and so when you're hunting in close proximity to other people with differing ideas about hunting and animals and management, you're gonna probably ruffle some feathers, and I think that's partially what happened here. And then also, like, you kill a big deer and jealous, you know, we're kind of joking about it with Mark's. It wasn't Mark's deer, but it was a deer that Mark saw that someone else killed.
He saw first. He saw first.
Tell me how good that deer tastes, Mark.
Thank you.
Then you can tell me if it's yours. But then that's you have brutal. Other hunters who are just, I mean, frankly, jealous that someone else killed a big deer and they didn't. And so they're gonna piss and moan about someone killing a big deer under circumstances that they wouldn't hunt, or they don't hunt, or they don't get to hunt. So, like we were talking about before we went on air, killing a big deer is great, but there's also a lot of drama that comes with it. I mean, grown men can be friggin' crybabies when it comes to other people killing deer, and so you're kind of seeing that with this scenario, plus the added complexity of differing opinions on hunting, especially in a suburban area. So, a lot of layers to that story.
It was such an epic deer, and he had been tracking it, and I'm sure a lot of people had seen this deer, famous in the area, that, you know, like you said, they're jealous of it. And here's the thing. He did it legally, and it's being claimed by, you know, some keyboard warrior that it was illegal, but he was so proud that he finally took this down. And again, he's been collecting sheds from it for 4 or 5 years, that he put it on a big time hunting website, and that's where the hate began, to the point of putting the guy's face and his cell phone number on telephone poles.
Him. See, that's a shame.
It is, because out of jealousy. What was the name of the fish in Mayberry that was the elusive giant fish that nobody could catch? Was it Walter or something like that?
Oh, on the Andy Griffith show?
Yeah. It reminded me of that story. Because it's this deer happened to be the elusive one. But you know what? As you mentioned, there needs to be management, certainly in the county. We hear from Mark all the time. He almost hits a deer every day to work.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Wild ones. Yeah. Well, you know, it's crazy because at DeerCast, I have a team of writers, and we do stories on big deer. And a lot of times we'll contact someone that killed a really big deer, and they'll say, you know, I'd rather not talk about it. I don't want my picture out there. I don't want my name out there, because these people know how other people in the hunting community can be. And I wrote a piece for my website, thethinkingwoodsman.com, a few years back, titled "The Very Best Anti-Hunters." And the premise is, it's not PETA. It's not true anti-hunters. It's other hunters being terrible to other hunters. I mean, imagine being a young hunter, someone who's new to the pursuit, and you're trying to get information, you're trying to get encouragement, you're trying to figure it all out, and you've got people that should be helping you, and they're giving you a hard time, and they're griping about the method you use. It's just, it turns people off. It turns people away. Like, why would I want to be a part of a group of people that is so catty and terrible to each other? So I think hunters can be the best anti-hunters, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Bo, you're thinking of Old Sam.
Old Sam. Do you remember that storyline?
I do.
Howard caught the fish that everybody had been trying to get forever.
And so we should call this deer Old Sam. that was taken down. Again, the guy had been tracking it. He'd been getting the sheds. It's just a shame. And this is where social media goes wrong. You know, the guy wants to put it out there, tell the world. If social media didn't exist, he'd tell a couple of buddies, and that's as far as the story would go.
You didn't join PETA?
No.
People for the eating of tasty animals?
Yes, I joined that group. Yeah. Yeah, I'm married to a vegetarian, remember. Yeah,
that's true.
You know what he did tell me? Because I did talk to this guy, BG, we're calling him. He said his first phone call was to the Missouri Department of Conservation, just to let them know this deer was taken where it was taken legally. Although the claim out there is people put his somebody put his phone number and his picture out. He got no hate. He got no. As a matter of fact, he got a couple of people reached out in Messenger.
Congratulations.
And he responded to them that, no, let me set the story straight. And it put those people back on their heels. So he was able to you know, explain it to them. And in a couple of weeks, maybe we can get him to tell the story here.
Yeah.
Well, a few years back, I killed a really good buck down at Devil's Backbone in Southwest Missouri. It went 160, and we did. There were a lot of stories written about it. He hit television. Like, there was a lot of media generated from that deer, And I saw people making comments online saying, oh, that deer was killed at Lake of the Ozarks, or see, that deer is eating a pile of corn. And I was like, my gosh, I was there. I killed that deer. None of those things are true. But it doesn't take any facts for people to make these claims. They just make a claim online and they move on. And it's like, holy cow, you're muddying the waters on something that just there's no controversy here. You're making something out of nothing. And it's really just it's so incredible to see how that happens so quickly. So I understand why people want to lay low and they kill a big deer. They don't want to deal with all the hassle and the drama from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I don't do it.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
So what do you have for 2022? Can you tease us about what's going on with Drury Outdoors and the Thinking Woodsman?
We definitely have some really big improvements coming to the DeerCast app. So that's really cool. I actually killed a couple really good deer this year, so they'll end up on TV on our show Natural Born, Winchester and Drury Outdoors Natural Born on the Sportsman's Channel. One of them was a suburban buck taken over in Wildwood. Like, he went 140 wow. inches. It was a beautiful deer, and I've been hunting him for 2 years. So personally, it was a good year, and I actually have a good 10-pointer in Eureka that I'm on right now. And I've got a few days left to seal the deal on, but it could be a really good deer. It could be a really good year for me because I did get a managed hunt tag. I was able to hunt Greensfelder County Park.
Oh, nice!
Through the Missouri Department of Conservation's managed hunt program. It took a nice buck out of there, and an antler deer. So trying to control the population.
Well, Tim Chelswick from Drury Outdoors, my friend. Thank you, and happy New Year to you.
Yeah, happy New Year, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, we'll talk to you in 2022, my friend. Be careful. Shoot straight out there.
All right. Lots to talk about coming up. It's going to be a great year.
Yeah, it really is. You know what? Good to see you again on our week hiatus we had over Christmas.
Absolutely.
Good to be back. Happy New Year, and thank you for listening to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Share the podcast with your friends that are of like minds that want to keep the Second Amendment and enjoy the great outdoors.
We'll see you next weekend.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.